Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for today's Teletown Hall on COVID-19 vaccinations. In the next 60 minutes, we'll be providing answers to your questions about what it means to be vaccinated, how to stay safe even with the majority of Americans having received at least one dose, and talk with local healthcare experts who will guide us through how best for everyone to assist in eradicating the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm sure you've seen the images and learned about what we are witnessing happening in India. This has to be one of the worst humanitarian issues today, with over 3,600 reported deaths in a single day, and the numbers continuing to climb. We're seeing the world's worst outbreak right now. And at the same time in California and in San Diego County, we had the first day where we had no reported deaths from COVID-19. My name is Tasha Bruna Horvath, and it's an honor to serve as your assembly member for Encinitas, Carlsbad, Oceanside Vista, and Camp Pendleton. When I took office, I have to be honest, I never thought I'd be leading during a worldwide pandemic. Since last year, our Teletown halls like this one have really tried to address what's currently on everyone's mind, from testing, contact tracing, to keeping kids safe online. I know there's a weariness of the pandemic talk. Many of us are getting our fair share of overdose on virtual and screen time, and everyone is wondering when we will get back to normal, gather and eat in a restaurant with the general public, or attend a concert or sporting event. These Teletown halls have helped my constituents to direct and understand the informative resources that they can trust. So today I want to thank my guest speakers who will help us navigate some of the questions we're hearing about vaccination. But before I begin, I want to start with a little bit of housekeeping. I want to let everybody know how our Teletown hall works. I know that many of my constituents in here in North County have submitted questions that we'll do our best to get answered today. To make sure that our panel can be heard by everyone, participants are in listen mode. If you'd like to ask a question during this town hall, please email assemblymember. And you have to spell my whole last name, Berner Horvath, BoernerHorvath. That's assemblymember.bernerhorvath@assembly.ca.gov. And we'll do our best to answer your questions as you submit them today. This town hall is being recorded, and we will make the recording available on my website, so that you may share it or listen again at your convenience. Let's begin by having our speakers take a 3 to 5 minutes to introduce themselves. So each of you, if you could each tell us about your agency, how your role has shifted during the last several months, and talk about some of the most common questions and concerns your department has been asked. Today we have with us Dr. Sarah Fatland, Chief Medical Officer at the Vista Community Clinic, Dr. Sunjina Gunta, who is the Director of Pediatric Services, also at Vista Community Clinic. And I want to welcome back from another Teletown Hall, Dr. Arcela Nunez Alvarez, who is the co-founder and co-director of the Universidad Popular, or UNIPOP, a nonprofit community organization that provides resources, programs, and services for our Latino communities and often acts as a community sounding board on a variety of issues. Thank you all for joining us. Dr. Fatland, if we could start with you. You have 3 to 5 minutes to say who you are, what's going on, and what people should know about COVID-19 vaccination.
Hi there. I feel like at this point we should have a book writing session instead of 3 to 5 minutes on what we've learned about COVID. This is Sarah Fatland. I'm super excited to be here today. I'm a family medicine physician by training, and I'm the chief medical officer here at Vista Community Clinic. We are a federally qualified health center or community health center with 9 sites in northern San Diego, Orange, and Riverside County. We provide a wide range of care for over 60,000 residents here. That ranges from community health services, non-clinical care, to prenatal women's health, pediatrics, optometry, dental, chiropractic, acupuncture, behavioral health, podiatry. We've got cardiovascular on site now, so we're really well-rounded in providing whole-person care to our patients. We're also a patient-centered medical home, which is really important, a distinction for us. And we have been navigating the pandemic just as everyone else has been, with rapid pivoting and shifting based on all of the information that has come at us. Which has been, again, like rapid fire, like you discussed. So I had the good fortune of becoming the chief medical officer at VISTA during the pandemic. So we actually moved to Southern California from New Mexico through this, which was its own interesting process. And now we're very much looking forward to continuing our vaccination efforts and getting to a place that feels a little bit more settled and quote unquote normal.
Thank you. Well, I don't envy you moving from New Mexico to here in the middle of the pandemic. And, you know, VISTA Community Clinic has been such a great partner to us throughout North County. You know, I was really pleased to see that you were one of the first federally qualified health clinics that got direct doses from the federal government. So I know we've been in contact of how I can best support you as an assembly member, and you've been so great in our community. Thank you, Sarah, for being here. And so now Dr. Gunta. Would you like to introduce yourself and say a few words about what you've been seeing?
Hi, thank you for inviting me to this session. I'm Sujana Gunta, and I'm a pediatrician at VISTA Community Clinic and also the director for pediatric services here. Dr. Fatland has given that beautiful introduction for our clinic and, you know, described all the various services we do, and more importantly, that we are an FQSC and also like a patient-centered medical home. So we, you know, try to provide this whole person care to the patient, and also a lot of community outreach work is being done by our clinic as well. More specifically speaking with respect to pediatrics and how that has changed during the pandemic, I think one of the biggest challenges has been, I think rightfully so, parents have been hesitant to get their kids to provide their, to get even regular care done, the preventive care, the well visits that are so important in pediatrics, because pediatrics, a majority of what we do is preventive care. There has been a significant lag in that because of the pandemic, and there's a lot of catch-up that we have to do this year. So besides encouraging everyone to get their COVID vaccine, I highly encourage all the parents listening into this call to, you know, call your doctor's offices and schedule those well visits that you've just been waiting on, as all clinics have been taking lots of precautions to do this safely and do this in person now. And that's what I would encourage at this point.
That's a fantastic reminder. I fall into that category of having postponed the well child visits, and so it's a great reminder to me for my 10-year-old and my 13-year-old that they need to get in to see the doctor. So thank you for that, Dr. Gunta. And now, Dr. Arcella Nunez-Alvarez, would you like to self-introduce and talk about what your work has been around vaccinations and during this pandemic?
Absolutely, and thank you so much for the invitation to be part of this really important community informational session with Universidad Popular. As you know, much of the work that we do is already very community focused. It's on the ground, being frontline, constantly assessing and identifying responses to address emerging and persistent needs in our community. But COVID really turned our work and deepened our work in ways that we had not imagined really could be possible. And I say that because our classes that so many families look forward to attending, you know, out in the community, at community centers and churches, out on the fields, you know, are in person, one-on-ones with families. And all of a sudden, we had to go virtual when so many of our family members don't even have computers, don't even have internet. So it really forced us to look for alternative ways of communicating with folks and to walk with our community to be able to bring everyone along as we were all having to make changes in the way that we communicate, that we teach, that we deliver services. So Universidad Popular being on the ground, we've been walking the same path, you know, with so many of the youth and families that we work with, being emergency providers, being emergency responders, and just constantly having to find resources for our community. So these are some of the ways that our work was dramatically affected by COVID. And I'll talk a little bit later about some of the work that we took on that was actually new for us.
Thank you, Ursula. And you have, I think that's, if we all just take a moment to sit and hear your words and how you've walked with our community, you have absolutely been a critical part of helping families in our district respond to COVID-19. You've highlighted some of the real inequities that we do have in the district. And, you know, it's been great to partner with you on really lifting up our community in so many ways. And that, you know, it took many different facets, but one of them is like a milestone we just reached, where at the Linda Rhodes Center, we had originally set that up together as a testing site, and it's now a full-time vaccination site. So, you know, your support on that and helping the community understand that vaccines are safe and, you know, they help protect us has been invaluable. So I think everybody listening, you can hear that we have amazing experts with us today. You are all true public servants working hard to ensure the quality of life for everyone, especially those hardest hit by COVID-19. So with that, no further ado, let's get started on some of the big questions that we've received into our office about COVID-19 distribution. So I'm going to start with Sarah, if it's okay. I always use first names. You can call me Tasha. That way you don't have to try to pronounce Berner Horvath all the time. You know, one of the biggest questions is an equitable distribution of the COVID-19 vaccine is of utmost importance to me, and I think many people in our district. What do you see as the benefits of local trusted, federally qualified health clinics and the community partners informing the public about vaccines?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think when we're talking about informing the public about the vaccine, we should remember that the research continually tells us that receiving a recommendation for a vaccination from a trusted source is the number one way to encourage people to receive their vaccine. So if people aren't yet sure that they should get the vaccine or experiencing what we're calling hesitation, having that trusted source to recommend it is so important. And that's what we do as NEFQHC or community health clinic. So we are the medical home for patients of any age, regardless of ability to pay. And we take a lot of pride in providing equitable and whole person care. So that extends beyond acute and preventive care, but we also have a lot of programs that allow us to get deep into the hearts of our communities that we serve, not just at our physical location. So as you mentioned before, we've also been supporting testing efforts throughout North County. We've got other programs that focus on health promotion, diaper distribution, food distribution, other enrollment assistance. And this allows us to form strong relationships that help build that trust in the community. Patients see us outside of the clinic and as a part of their group, which we are. So many of the communities where we serve patients that have been disproportionately affected by the pandemic overall, and FQHCs have been tasked with playing a very active role trying to reach your constituents and these communities with our vaccine efforts. So some of the ways that we're continuing on those trusting relationships is using many different platforms. We've also hosted some town halls, including a combined town hall with our Poder Popular Promotores. That was in English and in Spanish. We're trying to educate and dispel vaccine myths. We've been doing video recordings, helping with flyers, mailings, text messages, and we've also been able to use our mobile unit to help vaccinate individuals where they are.
And that's so critical. I think right now, I was just on a call this morning with the governors for the Women's Caucus, and his first thing was, we are seeing a decrease in people seeking vaccinations. So I'm, you know, really excited to talk to Sujana about how are we providing reassurance to patients to clear up some of the misconceptions about the vaccine, and what are some common myths that you're hearing, and how do you respond to that?
Yeah, Tasha, that's a really good question. So as mentioned by Dr. Fatlin, we have really made every effort to outreach in the community through various means. And we've also engaged our own staff in this conversation. You know, our staff comes from the same community that we serve, so it really helps in increasing vaccine confidence. And also every opportunity that we get with our patients, be it in person or via telehealth or any other means of the visits, we provide them avenues to discuss the COVID vaccine, ask their questions, and, you know, provide reassurance so that they feel more confident in getting the vaccine. Another motivating factor, I would say, for many is confidence in their own employers and also the convenience and access of it. So we were able to collaborate with some, for example, the growers to bring the vaccines to farm workers. So this not only reduces access, reduces the barriers, but improves access and also reduces the vaccine hesitancy. Some of the common myths that I've been hearing, or most of us have been hearing, I would say one of the most common one is that there is a perception in some of, for some in the community, that the vaccine has not been authorized by FDA. So I would like to assure everyone listening in today that all the three vaccines being administered in the U.S. have received emergency use authorization by the FDA. So this EUA, or this emergency use authorization, it's an approval process by the FDA designed to work in situations such as this pandemic. So no steps have been skipped, and this was still authorized by the FDA to be administered to the public. I also hear concerns that the vaccine was approved too quickly and hence may have skipped some steps. And that is not the case either. So all three vaccines have undergone extensive large-scale clinical trials and with, you know, a large number of participants. So, and only after reviewing all the safety and efficacy data carefully have these vaccines been authorized by the FDA. So they still went through all the phases like all other medications and vaccines go through. It may seem that it happened on a quicker timeline only because there was tremendous interest in this. We had to end the pandemic. We had to produce something which was safe, which was efficacious, but also we had to do it quickly. And there was a lot of resources poured into this process, and that's why it may have happened at a quicker timeline than what you hear about maybe other medications or vaccines. Some of the other myths I hear are that the vaccine would give them the disease or would alter their DNA or contains preservatives like mercury, which are all simply not true. So I highly encourage everyone to talk to your doctor if you have more questions, or go to trusted websites like the CDC or a reputed medical organization to get your information rather than from trying to get it from a friend or from social media. A couple other things that I would like to highlight is even if you've had the COVID disease, we still highly recommend that you should go get the COVID vaccine because post-disease, we do not know how long the immunity may last and how effective that might be. So you are still highly recommended to go get the COVID vaccine once you're out of your acute phase of your illness. Also, irrespective of you have a chronic disease or you have an ailment or you consider yourself healthy and you do not have any disease, everyone 16 years and up should go get their COVID vaccine.
Okay, so I'm going to try to recap that. It was a lot to remember. So one, it is safe, and
yes,
there has been no steps skipped in the authorization. It just happened on a larger timeline because we wanted to prevent people from dying. So, you know, we put, a lot of both the pharmaceutical industry, but also, like, doctors and the healthcare community put a lot of emphasis into this. So it's safe. It's been tested. Even if you're healthy or have underlying conditions, talk to your doctor. but everybody 16 and over, even if you've had COVID, should go get a vaccine. And then there's one I skipped. If you have any questions, you talk to your doctor. They can debunk any myths. And if you have any, you know, I think I've talked to people, and you know, not everybody pays attention to all the details. So if people have questions, they should talk to their doctor. Your doctor knows best, as I like to always tell my kids. And did I miss, I think I missed one key point, Sujana.
Yeah, that was a beautiful recap, Tasha. And just, you know, a couple of the other myths that we've been hearing, that it the vaccine could give you the disease, or it could alter your DNA, those kind of myths. And yeah.
So I've had two shots. My DNA is not altered. I am safe. I'm keeping other people safe. Because what I've also heard, and I don't know if you can speak to this, is that it looks like at least Pfizer, but probably also Moderna, stops transmission. Do you have anything about that? Because that's the one big thing with me traveling up to Sacramento and then back to my family, where I was really relieved when I got my second dose, was that, okay, hopefully I have less likelihood of bringing it home to my family if I were to catch it.
Right, and you're right about that. So originally the vaccines were designed to, you know, prevent the severe form of the disease and hospitalization and death, and the vaccines have been doing a beautiful job of that. But now that we have, you know, administered over 240 million vaccines in our country, we are now seeing that the number of cases in those vaccinated is really, really low, like less than 0.01%. So out of every 10,000 individuals, maybe one or two cases of a mild COVID illness or asymptomatic illness. But so the vaccines have proven to be doing even better than expected is what I would say.
Oh, I think we can give a collective sigh of relief at that, you know? And with that, I'd like to pivot over to Arcella. Arcella, we know that many in our underserved communities have had limited resources, and I know you and Unipop have been so great. I've seen you on social media, out there helping vaccinate farm workers, helping vaccinate those who are at the most risk of getting COVID-19, some of our essential workers, and helping to bring the vaccine directly to folks experiencing the digital or the transportation barrier, are simply unable to take a time off work to visit a county site during business hours. Do you have any plans to reach some areas in the community that still don't have access to vaccines? And what, you know, maybe you can highlight some of those plans.
Yeah, so I'd like to just pause for a moment and kind of remind all of our listeners of the fact that the group in San Diego County that has been so devastated by COVID, obviously it has touched all of us, but the Latino, Latinx community has really come face to face with that destruction in so many different ways. COVID exposed precisely those areas that were already in a precarious, you know, situation, where as a society we have lacked in investment and infrastructure development. And these populations, because of the language, they might not be even Spanish speakers, they might speak other languages, or because of their immigration status, their lack of access to technology, or as you mentioned, the geography, the fact that we have such a diverse region in North County, what we are seeing is a need to really target and focus our equity strategy in ways that it's going to make an impact and address those needs. So what we've been doing with Universidad Popular and dozens of community leaders and promotores, and also in partnership with our friends like at Vista Community Clinic, Neighborhood Healthcare, all these other kind of clinics and in partnership with many community-based organizations. We saw the need for basic support, so the vaccine is one of the areas that we are strategizing on how to best bring it to the communities that haven't had the access yet because of a number of barriers. So we do have a plan to continue doing community education, doing the outreach as trusted messengers, again, being on the ground. We want to make sure that every apartment complex, every neighborhood, frontline essential workers, our restaurant workers, hospitality industry workers that have not been targeted for this outreach, both for the vaccination, but just in general for workers' rights and other kind of support. So we are looking at continuing to invest the next 6 months to do a lot of targeted education in these areas. We are planning to have ongoing community clinics now shifting from the rural area into the urban areas, and we will be sharing information about that because now we think the focus has to be shifted to work in these underserved areas from a framework that brings the entire family out to get their vaccination. Especially as youth are becoming eligible, we want to make sure that the whole family is protected. So we have a lot of work to do, but it's been great to have really good partners out on the ground.
Yeah, and I think that's a great way of thinking about this next phase of vaccinations. Is previously, we were kind of like, people come to us, and now I think we have to shift into this, we come to you, let's vaccinate entire households. We, you know, I think originally we have limited vaccine supply, so we were trying to target those who are most vulnerable of the worst outcomes of COVID-19. And now we're, you know, I think we're having the shift to bringing the vaccines to the household. So with that, Sarah, can you talk a little bit about VCC's mobile vaccine unit? I know I get calls on the regular from people saying, can I get a mobile vaccine unit here? Can I get it here? And I was like, here, go talk to Sarah at VCC. And so how has it helped in combating some of the common barriers to accessing the vaccine?
Yeah, the mobile units are just absolute game changers when it comes to reducing barriers and improving access. So we've had dental mobile units and recently added this medical mobile unit that early on was used as a location to provide testing. And as you mentioned, we're now also able to use it to provide vaccine services. So we have this unit that's staffed by professionals, which includes a nurse practitioner who could potentially address any health concerns that are identified when out and about in the field. And it really helps people be able to access healthcare or the vaccine closer to their homes. So when I think about the vaccine rollout, many of the larger vaccine sites or mass vac sites, which were really hugely beneficial at vaccinating large numbers of people, also had a lot of challenges. So scheduling was a challenge, very complicated. It required technology that wasn't necessarily intuitive, even if you had access to a smartphone. Appointment times might not be convenient. I know of people who drove hours and hours to get to a vaccine appointment, which is really not very realistic for most of the patients that we serve or people in our community. So the vaccine experience is completely different at our clinic or through the mobile unit. We've had a lot of people just really prefer to be vaccinated at a smaller site. Maybe off hours, in a trusted setting. So we've been able to vaccinate folks at a workplace site, for example, at farm locations. We've gone to churches. So it's really been beneficial at reducing barriers to access to the vaccine. So we'll continue to be all hands on deck with our vaccines and and partner with organizations to get out into those locations like you were discussing to really get vaccines in arms, because as we all know that we to get to herd immunity or to get back to some semblance of quote-unquote normal or opening like we want to do in June, every person needs to have access to the vaccine, and every person needs to say yes to receiving the vaccine when it's offered to them.
Exactly. So, you know, we have the Just Say No campaign in the 80s. Now we're saying just say yes to vaccines. So I think that's a great – just say yes, right?
Get some stickers.
You know, exactly. Just say yes. So with that, you know, I wanted to touch on a specific issue. We saw in the media that Johnson & Johnson is incredibly convenient because it was a one shot. I think it was 2 weeks after the one shot you were fully vaccinated. But there was, it showed up in the media. There were some very limited cases of blood clotting. And we know it's being, used for kind of what we call the hard-to-reach communities, people who maybe they can't come back for a second shot or it's unlikely that they will. We hear that this vaccine was the workhorse vaccine to get many people vaccinated as quickly as possible. Did its temporary pause cause any setbacks? What do you tell people when, you know, that you're offering the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and they have questions about what they saw in the media or about it being paused or about being continued? How do you react to that? Maybe, Sunjana, can you speak to that?
Yeah, I can. So to start off, like you already mentioned, Tasha, this is prioritized for certain populations. Because they were harder to reach, like you already mentioned. It is due to the access to these populations that a single-dose vaccine, the logistics, proved to be much more better than, you know, trying to trace back these populations for their dose two. I mean, just consider the homeless population. How logistically complicated would it be to trace back an individual for dose two of the vaccine also in the right time frame? So that would get incredibly complicated when trying to do it on a much larger scale, which is what we have to do right now. So that's the only reason why the Johnson & Johnson, since it was a single dose vaccine, it was prioritized for these populations. The vaccine itself, it is just as effective as the other two vaccines approved in the U.S., which is the Pfizer and the Moderna. In fact, the single dose of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine creates a sufficient immune response, and hence it is a single dose. We don't need a dose two of that vaccine, and that's why it's designed as a single dose. Regarding the pause you mentioned, I would say it shows the commitment of FDA and CDC to be very transparent and committed in this process of, you know, continuing the monitoring of the vaccine even after it has received this emergency use authorization. It shows how, all agencies have continued to monitor, because as soon as a concern was recognized from the continued data being collected, the vaccine was paused. It has now resumed with certain warnings for potential high-risk groups. And also, when we take these things into perspective, if you just look at the numbers, so there were about 15 cases in more than 6.5 million doses for Johnson & Johnson. That is a risk about of 2 in a million, versus the risk of almost 2 in every 100 individuals infected of COVID dying of the disease. So we have to look at the risks and, you know, benefits of every single thing. But safety is priority. I completely agree with that. So pausing was the right step, but I would also say now resuming it is also the right step, because we now know that the risks are tiny, they're minuscule, and they far outweigh the benefits. Yes, it may have
to... go ahead.
So I was just going to say that, yes, this likely ended up causing some increased hesitancy in this particular vaccine, but it's our job to, you know, educate the community, educate our patients that how the risk of dying from COVID is about 10,000 times higher than any risk posed by this vaccine. That's all I had to say.
I think that's really good. I haven't heard it framed that way, and I think that's a really good point, so I want to reiterate it. The fact that FDA paused the vaccine when they saw 15, and what did you say, 6.5 million doses?
Yes, that's correct. 15 cases and
right?
6.5 million doses. Yep.
It shows that the FDA is closely monitoring all these vaccines, and so that should actually increase our trust in the vaccines and the vaccine process. So that's what I'm going to take away. I know I had several colleagues that they got the Johnson & Johnson because they wanted to just have the immunity quicker, right? And so they didn't want to wait for the second dose and all that stuff. So could you talk to about the risks for that 15 and the 6.5 million? Who, or is that some of the conversation people should have with their doctor about, you know, when should people be talking to their doctor about what risks they have about the Johnson & Johnson?
Yeah, so most of these cases were seen in women in the age group of 18 to 48 years. And so it is now coming with a warning that if you are in the age group, if you're a woman and you're in the age group of under 18 to 50 years, then yes, you do have a slightly higher risk of forming this specific kind of clot. So you should talk to your doctor. For every other member of different age groups and different gender, the risk is even significantly lower than even this high risk group that I was talking to you about. But it's not that that women in this age group should not get the vaccine. It is just that they're at a slightly higher risk, so we should still look at the risks and benefits ratio, and I would recommend talk to your doctor. But for every other age group or gender, the risk is pretty much non-existent.
So that's great. I'm 48, so I could have gotten the Johnson & Johnson and had very low risks, right? That's what you're telling me?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go. Well, thank you for that advice. With that, I want to we're a little bit over halfway through the Teleton Hall, and I want to make sure we kind of shift a little bit and talk about what Universidad Popular has done with farm workers in North Counties and what other high-risk groups is Universidad Popular targeting and prioritize alongside the 6,000 farm workers in San Diego County. So, Arcella, can you speak to that? What has your experience been vaccinating the farm workers? How has it been received? And then what other groups are you looking to prioritize?
Yeah, so it has been an incredible experience for our team of community educators and promotores and community leaders to be able to partner with San Diego County Fire Protection District, CAL FIRE, and their personnel to help facilitate access to the vaccine, and specifically the Janssen vaccine, to farm workers all over the county. But our work has been focused in the north region of San Diego, so in North County. We have had the opportunity to get a really unique glimpse into our agricultural sector in the region. We do have a billion-dollar agricultural industry that employs a large number of workers. We have close to 6,000 farms, right, in San Diego County. So the agricultural sector is so important to our community, our economy, but for us, so many of our own family members, you know, have worked in agriculture. So in partnership with CAL FIRE, we have been able to provide cultural, linguistic, and educational support at more than 20 clinics, vaccination clinics at actual work sites. We've been able to be on the ground to ease, just hesitation to answer questions, to welcome thousands of farm workers. And it's been a remarkable experience because we have a population that so many times in our community goes unseen. They're really, invisible. But having our team there to be able to speak to them in Spanish, because the majority of them are Spanish speakers, to have a team of women, especially at the nurseries where the majority of the workers are young females, and to be able to ask questions, to screen them, whether they've had other vaccines, whether they've had COVID. We've learned that this farm worker, population has been severely impacted by COVID. Many of them share with us the stories of what it was like to get COVID. A lot of them tell us that they don't normally go to doctors. They don't have a medical home. They don't have health insurance. So even, that concern, we've had a few cases out on the field where some of the workers had an adverse, reaction to the vaccine. And they were hesitating whether to go to a hospital because they don't have health coverage. And so we had to walk them through the process of, the state has protection, you will be covered, you don't have to worry about the bill that you're going to get. Like, there are special programs that you can apply for, like, you need to take care of yourself. So we've been on the ground, and it's been a really, I think, important partnership with CAL FIRE, because most of the firefighters, obviously, are not Spanish speakers. And for us, being out with the farm worker community, working with the growers, we've also have seen amazing partnerships with our local growers that care about the health of their workers. We're very proactive. And I think everyone needs to recognize CAL FIRE for the work that they've done, being on the front line, being the first response, especially here in San Diego. So as we see the farm worker population kind of getting their vaccines, we know there's still some work that needs to be done there. But there are now other sectors that we're trying to reach, other essential workers in our community, landscapers, construction workers, domestic workers. There are all these other groups that we're now kind of shifting our attention to them, because they're not employed by big companies. Many of them are self-employed. They may not even have health coverage themselves. And so this is a group that we need to reach because they won't have a way to get it otherwise. So we are doing some shifting and expanding that outreach and education to them next.
And I really appreciate that. I really appreciate you sharing all the work we've done at the state to make sure that during this pandemic, people are getting the health care they need. And I think you said it in your original opening remarks that the pandemic has highlighted every single inequity in our state, in our country, and in the world, And so I think shining that bright spotlight on what we have not done well in the past, hopefully we will take away from this what we need to do better in the future. And I can't agree more. CAL FIRE, CAL FIRE is one of our best agencies, I think, in the state for collaborating with different groups. And so they have been really amazing at getting to the harder to reach communities. And with that, let's transition a little bit to the outlook. So we've talked about vaccines. We've talked about the fact that they're safe. We've talked about the fact that they don't alter DNA. We talked about the fact that FDA is watching this very closely, and we should look at the fact that they are closely monitoring any side effects and any outcomes to make sure the public is transparently informed about what's going on. I think Sujana, you made a very good point that I also want to highlight, and that was that it's always a cost-benefit ratio, right? There's a, I always put it, my pediatrician back when I had kids put it this way, it was the best framing I've ever heard, which was you have a small, very tiny risk of something small happening with a vaccine and a very large risk of something really horrible happening like death, right? And so it's always this trade-off, and it's about understanding vaccines in that context. And so I think it's always good to think about that. But as we look at reopening, the governor, you know, we have some of the, I think we have the lowest rate in the entire nation of COVID positives right now in the state, which is such a juxtaposition to a place like India, which is, you know, has the highest outbreak right now. My husband's family is in Germany, very high rates, things are closing all the time. So we're in a very good position. And I think part of that is because we did do the vaccine rollout at a critical point. Before the UK variant, some of these more contagious variants, were able to come to California. So we've kind of, I always described it as an arms race between vaccinations and the more contagious variants. And fingers crossed, knock on wood, that we continue on this path. So if we continue on this path, we're looking at reopening. When people are assessing their risk of not being vaccinated with reopening and being vaccinated with reopening, how do you as medical experts, you know, and I'll turn it to Sarah and then we can go to Sujana, evaluate, you know, how should listeners evaluate their risk? If they're right now hesitant about getting the vaccine and they're looking at reopening versus I'm fully vaccinated and I'm looking at reopening, how should people evaluate that risk and what that experience might look like? Sarah, if we could start with you and then go to Sujana.
Yeah, I think the best way I can think to answer that is to maybe draw on my own experience. So I will say that I have been extremely cautious to abide by all of the regulations that the CDC has recommended and CDPH and the counties have recommended in terms of activities to avoid contracting COVID. So the day that I got my second vaccine and 2 weeks later when I was fully vaccinated and I stepped into an elevator and the door opened and a person looked at me and they kind of wanted to come on and I kind of wanted them to stay off, I had this internal peace about me thinking, I'm vaccinated. I'm vaccinated. I'm not going to get COVID from this person. It doesn't matter if that person was at a family gathering or if they recently traveled somewhere or if they were at work and had an exposure, because I'm wearing my mask, I'm protected. And that kind of reassurance was truly opening for me over the last year after being really feeling closed off from the world. And so thinking about how amazing that feeling was and how incredible that feeling still is such a reason for people to get vaccinated so that we can reopen. And you don't have to make choices of should I allow the grandparents to come see the grandkids? Should my kids be in-person school or at home doing homeschool? Should I go to work? Should I tell my employer that I have a cough? Should I be around this person? Can I go to a restaurant? Those questions go away when you are fully vaccinated. So the authorities, the CDC, has come out with a long list of things that we can do once we're fully vaccinated, and that list is going to continue to grow. But just drawing on that personal experience and the reassurance that I feel knowing that I am protected, my family is protected, has truly been heartwarming for myself, and I would encourage anybody else to have that same experience if possible.
I think that is a great way to frame it. I know because I have to travel up to Sacramento and back every week, and I have last year, and then we had full recess, and then I started up in January again. You know, my daughter's been in hybrid since September. She's been back full time and since after spring break in school, and like when I got my second shot, I was like, oh my goodness, I'm so relieved that if you know, even if I come into contact with somebody on a very booked plane, my daughter won't have to, you know, my daughter is unlikely to get it. She's unlikely to miss school and her class quarantine because I'm traveling, right? I think there is that reassurance that comes with it, in addition to all the other benefits of being vaccinated. So, Jana, do you have anything to add to that? Or Arceva?
Yeah, Tasha, I would just build on what you said. Like, I mean, all these benefits and all these freedoms that we can get after getting vaccinated, besides that, you know, besides protecting your own self, do it for protecting your loved ones, your friends around you, your family. Do it for protecting those who cannot get vaccinated at this time. For example, the younger members of our community, the children. I mean, hopefully the vaccine starts getting approved for younger age groups, but right now, anyone under the age of 16 years cannot get vaccinated. So you want to do it to protect them as well. So do it for yourself, do it for your loved ones, and get vaccinated for the community as well.
Yeah, that's great. We have conversations up here because I think they're expecting the emergency use authorization for 12 to 15 in the next couple of weeks. And we've been talking about, and we'll probably have these conversations offline, but how do we, once that comes in, how do we offer the vaccine to 12 to 15-year-olds before they go for summer break, right? We want to have as many kids vaccinated who want to be vaccinated before summer break so we don't see resurgences among younger people. So we might have to table that thought and come back to it, but definitely. Arceva, did you have anything to add to that question before I go on to one final personal question that I have?
I just wanted to say that what was articulated by all of you is exactly the kind of messaging that we are stressing in our community education. It is reminding folks that, you know, it gives us that freedom and that protection that we all should have in order to continue to live well and to thrive in our communities. And we want everybody to get that vaccine, to have access to it. So I want to thank you for making those points because they resonate very well with the community education that we're doing.
Well, and I want to thank you for that community education. So we're about to wrap up because this Teletown Hall has gone on longer, and I think it's fascinating, and I want to thank you for all your input. I have a personal question, and actually one of our constituents asked it as well. But everybody I know who's gotten the vaccine has had a reaction, especially with the second shot. But neither my husband or I had any reaction at all. We hydrated a lot and you know, but we didn't have any we didn't have any side effects from the second shot. Does that mean it didn't work?
We should have covered that in the myth section. even if you had no side effects at all, the vaccine is still doing its job.
So I think that's great for people to realize. I just happen to be lucky. Yes, I don't know if I'm lucky. I think I drank like 4 liters of water before I had my second shot, and then I drank like 4 more liters. Like so, I just hydrated. That was my trick. I'm not sure if it's just me or if that just works, but you know, I think we did a video. The next day I did the video for the Linda Rhodes Center, I was feeling fine. I was a little worried about that, but felt fine, and so I think that's a good thing that the vaccine works. Now, I want to cover this last point, and I know we're running short on time, but so there's been some conversation, and I don't like the word about breakthrough cases because we know vaccines like the Pfizer and the Moderna are about 95% effective, and I think you've cited some really good numbers on here. But Sujana, maybe you could speak to this, or Sarah, if you want to speak to it, about, you know, one of the myths that I think is out there is that if you get the vaccine, you can't get COVID. But my understanding is if you get the vaccine, one, you're less likely to get sick, end up in a hospital, and have the worst outcomes of COVID. Two, that there are some cases that come through because the vaccine's only 95% effective, not 100%. Sujana, can you speak to that?
Yeah, so So the vaccines, as I said, originally they were designed to, of course, we were looking at the safety and efficacy, but the whole purpose of the vaccine and to help, get out of this pandemic, it was designed that if you do end up getting infected, you don't get the severe form of the disease, that you would get hospitalized or that you would die from COVID. So that was the, ultimate purpose of the vaccine is how I would put it. So in that aspect, the vaccines have been really 100% effective. Regarding actually getting infected with COVID as well, yes, some breakthrough is expected. If you look at the actual, number of cases, recently I saw these numbers. So out of 95 million individuals who have been vaccinated, these numbers are only 8 in 100,000 people had this breakthrough, what we call. So even of those few and far and few in between cases, they have either been asymptomatic or had the mild form of the illness. So I would consider this a really good trade-off for reducing your risk, 10,000 times. I don't know. I haven't done those calculations. Probably a million times you're reducing your risk of even getting the mild form of the disease, and you're absolutely negating the risk of getting any severe form of the disease or the death.
Well, thank you. And Sarah, I think you might have a comment on this, but we are winding up our hour. This has been one of my favorite Teleton Halls. You guys have been so informative, and letting us know, and I think really helping us to kind of debunk some of the myths out there and some of the fears. I think this pandemic has brought out a lot of fear in different people in different ways. And I think helping to create a trusted source of information with this Teleton Hall is super important. So thank you all for joining us. As we go to final remarks there, I don't know if you want to include your remark on that last question into your closing comments, but if we could do 1 minute per person, we'll start with Sarah and then Sujana and then Arsela.
Yeah, I think you've done such a great job of summarizing our high points as we've been moving through this conversation, which has been a really great, fun opportunity to discuss the vaccines and COVID in general. I would just say the vaccines are safe. The vaccines work. Your healthcare provider, your family, your friends, your neighbors, your pastor, your any person in your life would benefit from you getting the vaccine, and hopefully those who have had the vaccine will encourage their friends, families, neighbors, coworkers, other connections to be vaccinated if they haven't yet done so. And reach out to your primary care clinician if you have questions and make that appointment. Or get it from a mobile unit, or get it from your apartment complex.
Exactly, exactly.
Sujana?
Yeah, considering that I'm a pediatrician, I want to say that as the vaccine starts getting approved for younger age groups, please take your children in to get the vaccine. At the peak of the pandemic, everyone talked about how less children were getting infected and only about 3% of the cases were among children. Now, though the cases are much, much lower, children are now accounting for almost 22% of the new COVID cases in our country. So please don't hesitate as it gets approved for younger age groups. And when it does, please take in your children to get vaccinated.
Perfect. That's a great closing message. Arsela?
I want to also remind everyone that if folks need help scheduling their appointments, to call our local clinics, to call Universidad Popular, and to remind all workers that we are, as workers, entitled to get up to 80 hours of paid sick leave in case the person becomes sick after getting the vaccine or need to take some time off to take care of family members, thanks to the supplemental paid leave. And so let's take advantage of it and let workers know.
Thank you. thank you for also highlighting this, the supplemental paid leave. That was a big discussion up here, but, you know, I think when, you know, especially during a pandemic, we don't want people who are sick going into work or potentially spreading it. We want people who are having, you know, kind of, you know, not feeling well after their shots to be able to recuperate appropriately, let their immune system build that response like they're supposed to. I want to thank each of you for joining us today. It's been so amazing to be able to go through and learn more about the current state of vaccinations and how, really, I would encourage every listener, the faster we pull together and encourage everyone we know to get vaccinated, the faster we're going to be done with this pandemic and get back to normal. You know, I know that we're all more informed after today's discussion, and I think I'm going to take these helpful tips and advice and share them with my friends and family and neighbors. I'm going to take Sujana's advice and set up appointments tomorrow with my pediatrician for my well-child visits for my kids. And I look forward to working with you to continue our respective work in the community. As always, my office is here to assist you and welcomes your questions, comments, and concerns. My goal is always to provide the highest quality of public service on state-related matters. If you have any questions that you think of later that weren't asked today, you can email my staff. My district director is janet.chin, C-H-I-N, at asm.ca.gov. My field representative for health is Sulima Balderas at asm.ca.gov, or you can just call my office at 760-434-7605. I'll say that again, 760-434-7605. You can also visit my website. We have a very extensive COVID-19 navigator, and you can visit us and get this recording as well to share with your family and friends at www.a76.asmdc.org. We're going to have the archives of recording. We have the COVID navigators. We have events coming up. We're still accepting applications for our Young Women's Empowerment Network in San Diego, in my district. So if you know of a young woman who wants to have mentoring and go into public service, that's also that deadline's coming up. So I really want to thank everybody in your participation today. Thank you, and enjoy your evening, and stay safe, North County. Let's get vaccinated.